Hey everyone, I'm Joel Hubbard. I'm a Enneagram coach here in Boston. And man, I'm so excited about what we're doing.
Yeah, my name's Jim Zuriman, and we want to welcome you to the Enneagram Panels podcast. Tonight we have the 9, which we're so glad you can listen to in stark contrast to the 8.
Yeah, oh boy, this is, some of you know these types, they're in your world. They tend to be really warm, sweet. They're not assertive types. They're not going to be in your face. They seldom tell you what they think or feel, but they're excellent at bringing people together. And so they're beautiful people. And what I like about this is this gives us an opportunity to really understand how we can help them also sort of emerge, you know, and come into relationship with us, because we want to know who they are. We want to know what they feel, what they think. And so this is what I love about this particular panel, is because we get to see and understand what's going on and also how to interact with them in a way that that's helpful to them.
Yeah, and since I was on the 8 panel, you can really hear the intensity of the 8 panel. And with this one, you really can hear the warmth of the 9. How kind they are, how open they are. Most of you love to have a 9 as a friend. They're just absolutely fabulous. So we're so excited for you to hear what it's like to live in the skin of a 9 from 9s themselves. Joel would give a description at the beginning of the session, and then you get to hear from them. So thank you so much for joining us.
All right, 9 panel, come on up. This is why it's really good to do panels really close together, because you get to see the drastic difference, and then you realize the world really is different. Oh my goodness. 8s and 9s, even though they're one number apart, they're part of the body triad. They deal with anger as their core emotion. Completely different than the way you'll see the 8. So thank you, 9 panel. I know 9s, you don't like to be in the spotlight. That is not your natural comfort zone. 9s are called the peacemakers. 9s learned early on in life that their needs, their thoughts, their beliefs, their opinions really didn't matter much. They had this natural propensity towards peace and towards avoiding conflict. And so because of that, combining that with this experience of life that tells them their views, their thoughts, their person isn't that important, they go into this mode of, I need to always repress what I feel, what I think, in order to keep this internal sense of harmony, this internal sense of peace, and also this sense of connection with people. I don't want to lose connection. For some 9s, that is the dread, is the fear that I might lose that connection with the people that I love. And so the 9 begins to forget itself, forget its thoughts, forget its opinions. Coupling that with the gifting of being able to actually incarnate other people. I mean, you talk about a beautiful ability to get inside the skin of another person and understand them and understand their views. 9s will often say to person A, oh, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So it's like this. Oh my, yeah, that's very, wow, right? The 9 will go with the next person. They'll have a completely different view. They'll be actually in opposition to this other person. There's a fight between these two, but they'll meet with person B and, oh yeah, oh, wow, I hadn't thought about it that way. That's a really interesting. And with each person, the 9 has, not intentionally, but has convinced these people that the 9 is with them and is on their side. The 9's not on anybody's side. The 9 is on everybody's side. And then when you ask the 9, well, what do you think? The 9 goes, deer in the headlights. What is that? What do you mean about that? So similar to the 8, the 9 does not know right away what it feels. It's not something that, again, we're dealing with a body triad. Body triad people tend not to be self-aware of in terms of the emotional space, right? And so a nine will just sort of, I don't know. So if you ask a nine, hey, what do you want to do for dinner? A nine will say, I don't know. What do you want to do? One of the Jedi tricks that nines have is the ability to flip things right back onto the other person. So like, they're perfect canvases. Nines are the canvas. They do not want to be the painting. And so if you say to a nine, like I'd sit occasionally, Gabe, I'm going to put you on the spot. I'd say, Gabe, let's get together and talk. I want to catch up, see how you're doing. And I'd say, so Gabe, how are you doing? 15 minutes later, I realize I'm talking about myself. wait, Gabe, I'm talking about me and I wanted to ask, how are you doing? And Gabe would go, oh yeah, okay. And then I'd say, so Gabe, how are you doing? What's going on? So what's happening with this? So he chit-chats a little bit. And once again, 15 half hour later, I'm talking about myself again. Dang it, how did you do that? And it's their Jedi power. They can flip it around onto you. They're very warm, which you'll pick up on nines, very warm, comfortable people to be around, very safe people to be around. They seem to have no agenda. And so they're excellent at peacemaking. The challenge for the nine is that they're not good at bringing themselves into the peacemaking process, their own desires, their own opinions. For the nine, avoiding conflict is the goal. They can tend to have this shock absorber inside them where they absorb everything from the outside world and it just, they absorb it and then their own internal feelings as well. And so this is the effort of the nine, is to maintain harmony and peace at all costs, and in the process, oftentimes losing themselves. And that's the challenge of the nine, is how do I bring myself to the fore? You know, who am I? And so the challenge, the question I'll oftentimes bring to a nine is, who are you? And let's work on that. So that becomes the transformational process. So let's talk to the nine panel. Do you guys relate to anything I have said so far?
Of course, John.
Would you? Would you say it differently? No. Would you add to that? No, no. So I'd love to hear from you guys.
Do you guys want to go first?
Which one of us wants to go first? Oh, no, it's okay.
Yeah, I was very much a people pleaser growing up. Saw my father do that in an amazing way. And that just gets, I think as Allison was speaking to it, just gets reinforced all the time through the church, you know, be nice, be whatever, as opposed to being yourself or even being aware of who you are, because in my family, you didn't have feelings other than fine, which can be an acronym for something pretty, pretty nasty. But people would ask me how I felt, and I would just say fine. You know, other emotions were not accepted, and that certainly enhanced my nine stature. You know, you guys talked about being fighters. You know, fighting with the world. You know, getting out there and struggling with the world. You know, you've talked about abuse. I was molested at 5 and was just paralyzed. Did not do anything. There are other people who would fight the world about that, and I just paralyzed. And when conflict happened, that could happen too. You know, I grew up, many of you know, in a dorm starting at 6 years old. To get through that, I was about pleasing other people, you know, avoiding conflict that way and making sure everybody was happy.
You know, I've been thinking about why I am a nine. Like, I don't know, maybe we are like born a certain way. But I was thinking recently about the piece of like how a nine doesn't feel heard or like important or whatever. And I grew up, you know, I have 3 brothers, loving family, Christian. But I think the message that I got was self-denial is the most spiritual. I think that was like a big message for me. Like, what I do doesn't matter. Like, don't take time for yourself. Like, just denying all your needs. Like, that was the most spiritual thing. You know, I was a middle child, but I never felt like totally shut off or nobody was looking out for me. And yeah, I have twin brothers. And of course, my parents gave probably more attention to them. But I mean, my parents were amazing at loving me, always giving hugs, very affectionate. But I think it was just growing up in a Christian family that just deny yourself, your needs, you know, don't worry about your needs, serve others. Like, that is the most spiritual thing you can do. And just being, you know, at the top of that triangle and being able to see everybody else's perspectives. It was so easy. I mean, I was actually good at that, you know. But then the epiphany of realizing, I thought that because I could see and know and feel where everyone else was coming from, that surely I would know how I felt or what I was thinking. So it was kind of revelatory to me that, oh my gosh, I don't know what I think. I don't know what I feel. I don't know what I want. Like, is that even a question I'm allowed to ask myself? You know?
Wow.
Yeah. Oh. yeah, one thing you're talking about is peacemakers. Like, you know, growing up and even in my life now, I find myself always, always agreeing with somebody or passing it off to being like, well, what do you think we should do? It's never like, Jen, what do you want to do? You have to give me, Gabe and I talk about this, you have to give me the multiple choice. Otherwise, I'm like, I don't know. Even of the, you know, anything ranging from like, what do you want to do for your career? Even I remember being in high school being like, what do you want to go to college for? I'm like, I don't know. And literally my dad's like, why don't you do business? And then I took an accounting course and I was like, wow, the debits have to equal the credits. Equilibrium, I'm there. And that's where I like totally have found myself. And like my favorite class was algebra. Why? Because Y equals MX plus B. Like everything equaled. And that's totally like me. It's really nerdy, but that's just me. And like, you know, I found that like throughout my career and, you know, my personal life and whatever, people have always come to me and been like, Jen, you know, you're such a nice person. And even though I feel like I've made a lot of mistakes in my life and said things that I didn't mean and whatever, people always seem to trend towards me. And I have connections with people I went to high school with all the way through college, people that are like my ex-boyfriend's friends and just like all this stuff of like people that just kind of gravitate towards me. And it's really it's a comforting feeling, but it's also kind of like awkward because it's like, is this okay? I don't know. And between that and also as far as we're talking about with emotions, I've talked to Joel about this a lot. Like I have a very hard time. I'm all in the head, all in mind and body. Like when I don't feel right, I start analyzing, how can I fix this? How do I fix this problem? Like for a long, long time, I would never cry. Even when I had to put my dog down, I didn't cry. Cause I'm like, that's showing weakness, kind of like, somebody had said that earlier, and it just repressing that down and being like, no, this here, you know, he's dying because it's the end of his life. And that's the, you know, you always go to the rational side of it. And then the emotions come out when you don't want them to, like something happens and you just start bawling for 20 minutes and you're like, where did that come from? And learning how to tap into that a little bit more is, you know, personally what I've been working on, which is extremely awkward and extremely hard. Cause I've just been so like, up in here or body where I like love going running. I love doing CrossFit. I love working out and like walking my dog. And that's how I also kind of ignore emotions by doing as well. Mm. So I don't know. That's kind of what my nine world is a little bit.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Let me see. You know, one of the things that, you know, as I'm exploring nineness in the Enneagram is you realize how these traits aren't these straight parallel lines that never intersect. It's like a web that's pushing on each other. It's pushing and pulling against each other. All these things. When, you know, Abby was talking about self-denial, there's always this delay. Like, my moment's coming, but I'm always pushing it off to do something else. I will choose the other thing. I will choose either to check out or do something really good, but maybe not really what I'm supposed to be doing. And that, you know, in turn feeds into the way I feel about conflict, because if I actually start doing what I'm supposed to be doing, then there's inner conflict because of all sorts of things. Like, who is this going to upset? Wow. What if I fail? What if I'll just on and on and on and on. And so you just go on to something else. Yeah, maybe that's it for now.
Well, you said the real issue for me, and maybe what you're saying too, is prioritizing. I cannot prioritize for anything. I'm serious. I'll get up and I'll have intention to just go and get a cup of coffee. Well, before I get there, my daughter will want something. And then I'll like go there. And then I have to go to the bathroom. And then I'll go over here. And then I'll get there. You know, like you're like a little ant. Just like I can't ever prioritize anything. And I just knowing it's like everything's on equal ground. You know, like they're all things that need to happen. And then I'll lose track. And then I'll be like, oh, but then I need to have lunch for here and here. And then like time management, like I've worked so hard, but it just, I almost want somebody just to hand me a list and just be like, do this, 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 and this, you know? But then there's also a stubbornness to us. So if somebody tells me, well, you need to do this, I'm not even aware of it. I'll just want to not do it. I don't know what it is. I'm like, well, damn it, I'll do it in my own time. Or, you know, like, I don't know. So it's like this desire to want a list so I can just not have to spend the energy to figure out what to do next. Mm. But then this like stubbornness, I don't even know how to describe the stubbornness, well, but it's there.
That's so good, the way you're describing that, because you're getting at the core of what a lot of nines and experts in the Enneagram describe as the nine gets caught between, the nine is at the top, and then you have the three and the six. The 9-6-3. The 9-6-3 forms this triangle of where the nine goes. The three is the performer that goes and gets things done. They just, nothing stops them. They're machines. The six is the one that has a lot of ambivalence. Geez, I don't know. It may not be safe. They're more phobic. So it's, I don't know, we got to look at all the angles, look at everything else. The way you describe that is right on with the nine saying, I don't know what to do, but you get stuck between the six and the three. If I get given a list, then I'm just like, you know, some describe it as the gas and the brake being applied at the same time for nines.
I'll even give myself a list and I can't even follow it.
You're stubborn with your own self.
Like, yeah. Right? I'm like, I know I said I was going to do this, but I find myself not doing it because something else just comes, you know? It's like you're so present that, and you know, we're always told be present, but it's almost, in my case, I feel like to a fault because I can never look far enough ahead or something. You know, like if I'm in a conversation, I'm totally lost in that conversation. And then, you know, if I need to be somewhere else or I need to get the groceries or I'm totally lost. And maybe that's speaking into the one-on-one part. Like maybe I'm just so present that I lose track of time and space and things to do. And I have responsibilities and, you know, like even here at church, you know, I'll be talking to people and I'm like, I have no clue where my daughter is right now. You know, like I need to, so.
Mm. Yeah, really good.
Just in terms of what you were saying about being able to hear people and understand them, I became a therapist. So I guess that was that for, you know, 3 decades, that was a big part of my life. And not only that, but a lot of it was being a family therapist. So you talk about hearing
conflict.
So there was conflict, but I was trying to bring some peace into that. And it was, you know, often very difficult to take. You know, I know as that type, it would affect me internally a lot more than it would some other types. But I was trying to bring some resolution and...
But you don't have that affect. Like if someone were to look at you, they wouldn't know that you're...
Oh, right. They didn't know what was going on in my body.
Because nines exhibit this external peace. Mm-hmm. But you're saying that's because you look at the nines up here, right? They look calm. They look relaxed. They look very... But is that what's going on inside of you? You're saying it's not what's going on inside because you are picking up on the energies around you. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, like, kind of what you were saying about the checklist thing, I lean more towards three on that because I'm totally a checklist person. And I always think way ahead and I look way back. And it go, you know, again, when I was talking about, like, all being in my head. And I'll... try to deal with current emotions by thinking ahead. Like if I'm upset right now about something, I'm like, but it's going to be okay later. Or I'll be like, I'm upset about something in the past. Well, it's going to be okay later. Or I'll, you know, think about something in the past that's good and perseverate almost on that to make myself feel better now rather than just feeling the emotion that I'm feeling right now and letting it pass through. I don't really get that lost sense of feeling like you do. But I can relate to the, you know, all these things will be going on inside me and people will be like, I had no idea you were upset. And I'm like, good. I didn't want you to because I'm at work. But like, you know, it's, you know, there's other personality types that kind of wear their heart on their sleeve. Like at work, I work with a lot of type A personalities, a lot of emotional people, and they'll just drop of a dime. They're okay with crying. Whereas I'm like, all right, no, it's okay. And I'm more of like, it's fine. Even though, you know, internally I want to cry with them, but like I usually can't get myself there.
Hmm.
But that's like, you know, the struggle that we all have, I guess.
Yeah, we're kind of like swans. Like they're these beautiful, graceful creatures when you see them on the water. But if you look underneath, their feet are like. And so, yes, I'm National Geographic over here. But yeah, I think for the nine, there are like two pieces, P-E-A-C-E. You know, there's like, you know, when I was a kid and there would be maybe people downstairs arguing, I would want that to go away because the feeling in my stomach was unbelievably out of control. And so wanting to squash things for my own sense of peace. And then there's the other piece, which is the sort of beautiful spiritual peace that, you know, when you feel it, it feels like a gift, you know, where where you either experience or you help bring about people experiencing. It's a very sort of selfless peace. And then there's the selfish peace.
Mm.
Just in terms of work, I was director of this agency that I was, human service agency that I worked at. And we basically, in staff meetings, they would probably go longer than most, but we made decisions by consensus. You know, as a nine, that's no big surprise, right? You just want to know what everybody's thinking and let's all get along. And I think in general, it was fairly healthy, but there were times where I was able to move to my eight wing because we couldn't come to a consensus and I would have to make the decision as the director. And there were times, a lot of times when that was very uncomfortable. Mm. I mean, eights wouldn't have a problem with it, right? You guys can't decide. This is what we're... Yeah, what do you got to talk about it for? Why didn't you just follow me in the first place?
Why'd you have a meeting in the first place? That's excellent.
Yeah. And there were times I had no idea which direction I wanted to go. So I wanted to hear everybody's opinion. So, but for the most part, and this was dealing with several people with, you know, many different personality types. And in general, they said it worked well doing that, as long as they knew that I would step up when a decision needed to be made and we couldn't come to consensus. But in general, they would tell other people, apparently, that it was a good way to atmosphere to work in and good working environment. Obviously, if they didn't feel like I could ever make a decision, then, you know, it would have been another thing. But so I was able to lean into my eight, I think, when I absolutely needed to, but it wasn't always comfortable. Mm-hmm. So.
Any other thoughts? Or I have some questions as well. So.
Yeah, let's please.
Well, I'm just, before you say that, the last thing I'll say on an agenda, and I'm kind of curious to know if it's just a me thing or like a nine thing. So when I am out in around other people, I am always aware of what other people's intentions are or agenda or what they're thinking. And so my belief growing up was that, well, I don't really know what I think, or I have to like pull back in order to even know what I think about something. And so because I always know what the other person is thinking, I just naturally select to do whatever they're wanting, thinking that that's okay. And so then I find myself getting getting angry because then, well, dang it, I do want some things in life and I don't have time for me, which is where the anger starts seeping out. But do you also feel that you can feel and know what other people are thinking all the time, but you don't know what you think? No.
That's a lie. For sure. I process internally. Sometimes I need time. Sometimes I need a lot of time. And it is easier to just go, okay, they're waiting on you, you know, just go along. But there's also like other weird behavior, like when you know you definitely don't want to do something and you're going along anyways, or the anger and that weird passive aggressiveness that comes out when you're angry about not doing what you need to do or what you want to do. And it's not like your typical passive aggressive. It's more just like being aggressive about being passive, you know? Anyway.
That's well put. That's awesome. That's so interesting. Aggressive about being passive. I love it.
Yeah, I think like as far as like the anger thing goes, like at least for me, I have a hard time with the small decisions. Like you were saying, like, where do we go to dinner? Like, we have this a debate every week. But like, those are the things that don't matter to me, or like, what color house do you want to have? Or like, what should we, you know, what kind of couch do you want to buy? And, you know, what do you want to wear today? I'm like, I don't know. I don't care. But when it comes to bigger decisions, like, you know, do you want to buy this house and spend, you know, $500,000 on this house? Like, then I'll have an opinion. And I feel like it's, or something related to my family. Like, you know, if someone's being, you know, if someone's ill, I'm going to go help them. And I'm not going to let anyone get in my way to stop that, even though I might be like, oh, well, my crazy friend over here is calling me and says, I need you right now. I'm like, no, I need to put you aside because my family needs me right now, type of thing. So it's like, I think when there's certain decisions that we then tend towards, is it, I don't know what number that is.
Well, when you're, like, you mean making decisions?
Yeah.
Yeah, the three.
The three. So I think like, at least at those times. Yeah. But most stuff for me, again, is more like, well, what does everyone else want to do? And if it's of no big consequence to me at the end of the day, then I'm like, well, whatever. But if it's something that I may or may not know at the time, but later on, I might hold that passive anger, internal sort of thing. And it might come out in a way that, you know, people are like, whoa, like you're mad, you know, and it's, I don't know if that's passive aggressive or just anger seeping out. Aggressive. Yeah, or you might like say a comment to someone and you're like, oh, whoops, I shouldn't have said that. And then you feel bad about it for 2 days and, you know, move on. But I think like, yeah, it depends on what the decision is.
Just comparing again to the eights, if somebody disagrees with you, you want to know that. Whereas for us, if somebody disagrees, we're like, oh man, I'm so wow. You know, you can become obsessed with, yeah. Oh man, they're not happy about that. Or, you know, they're upset. Or, you know, I remember in high school seeing this girl who was really down and I went up to her and said, how you doing? You know, do you want to talk? Do you want to talk about it? No. And I mean, just in terms of, I thought, man, I'm being so nice to you and showing real interest and really feeling bad for the person based on, you know, she was a relatively, you know, good friend. But to be turned down like that was absolutely horrible because I was genuinely interested, feeling genuine interest and couldn't please her in that particular time.
So talk about the mechanism, which is one of the defense mechanisms of the nine. To maintain its type is this thing called narcotization. And it's a way of keeping you from actually doing the things that you know you should be doing, the things that are your priorities, the things that are on your heart to do. What does that look like? And maybe talk about how you're growing in that space and what you're learning.
Yeah, actually, you talked about family, you know, stuff. What I was doing, though, was being such a people pleaser, and when it was really unhealthy, was only attending to other people and work, people at work, and not attending to family sometimes because I was pleasing other people in my life. Mm. In the immediate, like you say, you lose sight of what's literally on 9/11. Diana went straight home and wanted all of us home. And, you know, and I was saying, yeah, there's people here that need me in the agency. And that was, you know, that's still like a big thing, you know, if we talk about it. I was like, man, I can't believe you didn't come home until whatever it was. But she was like, no, we're going home. We're going to be safe. We're going to family. And I was just, well, of course, and the fact of growing up in a dorm where we, you know, I wasn't in my family was, you know, you were with other people making connections. So I'm sure that's part of it. But still, that was pleasing those people that I was with in the present. And that was a big hurt for her that I didn't just sort of immediately knee jerk to no going home. We're going to, you know, be our own little, family and couple. And so in terms of repressing our own feelings, I had a mentor in college who taught me a verse that I grew up in the church, obviously with my parents being missionaries. Something I was never taught to memorize was Hebrews 5:7, which most people don't know, but I never forgot it because I realized, no, I've got some feelings and some passion in here when I'm able to pay attention to it. And I can feel sad and I can feel passionate about some things. During the days of Jesus' life on earth, he cried out with loud cries and tears. And I was never, you know, I was taught the sweet Jesus, meek and mild growing up, right? Loud cries and tears? You mean that humanity in Jesus, and we're allowed to do that if we're to be like Jesus, that's okay. So that was a huge thing for me and has continued to be that it's okay to identify, actually stop and figure out what you do want and what you feel, and then to express that passion. And as Allison was saying, for the church, it's okay for people to be able to have real, authentic feelings and vulnerability and have us as a body be able to appreciate that and take it in and to validate it and hear people about that, not just the nicey nice churchy church type of stuff, which many of us are familiar with.
So we do have the least amount of energy as all the types. It's exhausting thinking and trying to keep your own thoughts, like looking at everything from every side, every angle, every possibility. How am I doing? How am I with this person? And like, so there's like the inner dialogue and then there's the outer dialogue and all the people coming in and wanting everybody to be like comfortable and happy and peaceful and full of life. And like, you're just wanting everybody to be happy and peaceful. And then you're working on your inside. Like, that's exhausting. And so sometimes some people get all riled up and angry. And I'm like, I just need to sleep. Just let me sleep. I'll figure it out. I'll think, I'll wake up. I'll be okay. I mean, the work is to not stay there, but it's like a double-edged sword. Like, the sleep can become a negative thing if you just like go into hibernation. But I also think we get a bad rep about that. And I want to stand up for our sleeping. And I find it really helpful too. So I think it's very positive as well.
Good for you, Abby. This is excellent.
Let's all applaud the nine speaking up for itself. That's fantastic.
That's probably because I'm married to an eight and I have gotten a little bit of that.
That's interesting. You said you're married to an eight. When the eights were talking, I'm like, Gabe, we need more eights in our lives because those are the people that will stick up for you and fight the good fight and be like, you can, it's okay to let your emotions out or it's okay to say something. Because I find that like I cocoon in when like, you know, the past like 2 years, my life has been shaken up quite a bit. And I was like, well, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. And you just kind of like keep yourself, at least me, I keep myself distracted with other things that aren't the actual emotion. So I'll go out and like, you know, I've been reconnecting with all these friends. I've been doing all these road races. I've been, you know, just keeping busy, busy, busy. And like, and I even have a hard time sleeping because it's still like my mind's still going even after I lay down. And I find that at least for me, I I distract myself from tapping into the emotion as a defense mechanism against it because I put it off and say, it will just go away if I just stop thinking about it or if I just stop dealing with it. Because one, I don't really know how to deal with it because I don't know how to tap. I'm still learning. And that's like the work I'm doing now is trying to tap into, okay, when I'm feeling really happy, like lean into that. Or when I'm feeling really sad, just let it out. Like, hopefully, you know, it'll be in a good time and place, not where you're like in the middle of the workday, just like burst out crying or something. But, you know, it's just trying to, you know, cope with that. And like, yeah, I find like I've been saying to everyone, I'm like, I am exhausted. Like, it is so exhausting being single. Like, it's awful in a lot of ways. But like at the same time, and I'm also taking this time to finally like take time for myself and be like, okay, how do I tap into dealing with emotions and feeling? And because for so long, basically half my life, it's always been like crying is, you don't need to cry. Like, it's not just, it's not acceptable to cry on a weekly basis just because you need to cry, or everything's going to be fine. And even like my mom still says to me, just let it go, just let it go. And it's like, you know, my mind's like, yeah, Jen, just let it go. And, you know, but your emotion still says, no, it's still here. So that's the, you know, that's the conflict internally. I think, you know, Gabe was talking about that too. So.
I don't check out. No, I'm just kidding. I swing both ways where I can be extremely, extremely busy, have a long work day. I will say yes to everybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so like that's in its own weird way, it's a form of narcotization because you're not being present. You're not being present to you, your needs, your goals. You're picking up other people. And then at the same time, you know, you can find yourself on the couch and eating and it's really good there, and you can justify it because I swing both ways. So you're really busy, and so like, oh, I've done so much, and instead of doing something that's sort of fulfilling, restful in a fulfilling way, you do something, you know, like you eat too much, or you know, I'm getting to the point now where I can tell if I'm reading a book or watching a movie, and it's giving me energy and it's something positive, or I'm just vegging out. Mm. So it's fun.
That's where the nine, it's what they call the narcotization of the nine. It's because the nine has different expressions, which I'm so happy there's diversity here in terms of how you express your nine. Because to say nines are all slow people would be not true. We have presidents of the United States that have been nines. You can't be slow. But the decision-making process for nines is slow. So they can have a very busy and active physical body. But what's going on internally, it's like, okay, so Jen, you're kind of like a, you know, driver. You're getting things done at work. But in terms of, okay, let's slow down and talk about Jen and your priorities, your internal sense. Who are you? What's going on? Then it's like, that slows down, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the whole processing is about the self is where we're talking about narcotization means you're narking out yourself to you, to your person as a nine. That's where it shows up. Well, thank you so much, nines. I love the fact that there's four of you because you can get a good kind of expression and feeling of the nines. Questions you might have for the nines.
If you were to say, how would you want somebody to relate to you? What do you want from the world?
Great question.
More eights.
we can just carry on checking out, and you guys can do the heavy lifting.
Okay, so let's rephrase that question. What helps you as a nine do the right action, which is the virtue of the nine, get to your priorities?
I think I think space and gentleness with a certain type of an encouragement that's sort of a little firm, you know, like.
So, it's already too much.
So.
Oh, come on now.
Well, believe me, after listening to you guys, I was exhausted.
That's great.
But there's a line from My Big Fat Greek Wedding. As an Italian, I just relate. That goes, tell me what to say, but don't tell me what to say. And I think that's really telling because there's a structure that's important. There's a love of freedom, a sense of we don't want to be put on, I think, but we like structure in the same. It's a little confusing. So
we are confusing.
I know. For me personally, my therapist said something to me a few weeks ago, and she's like, Jen, at the end of the day, the only person you're responsible for is yourself. And I think for me, having people surround or, you know, people around that are not lifting up per se, but just helping guide me, find me and find the core of like, who am I? Cause like, you know, I've been asked that question in the past and I'm like, I don't even know. Or like when things aren't going well or when they are going well, it's like, you're just kind of going along. You never really stop and think about yourself because you're so busy making sure that everyone's okay. And you're trying to help everyone out and everyone, you know, your whole aura of people are in the, you know, in a good spot. You don't stop and just take 10 minutes and like just sit and be with yourself. And I think people that can remind us of that and say, hey, you know, how does that make you feel? Or even, and it's kind of like an awkward thing to ask somebody, but like just when people ask me, how are you feeling today? And my go-to has always been, oh, I'm fine. And, you know, just leave it at that. Now, like I've been trying to work on saying like, not being like, oh, today sucks, but more like, you know what, I'm feeling kind of off today, but, you know, and just being more self-aware and having people surround you that remind you that you do have, like, you matter. Mm. Like, because I think we forget about that. Like, we all have a place at the table. We all have value, even though at the times in our lives where we don't remember that or we don't feel like we have value because we're so busy trying to reconcile what's going on around us. And I think, to me, that's what I feed off of more, and that's what I would want more of from those that surround me.
Yeah, I think just actually space and time. You know, space and time. It's for the nine, I think we have a lot of personal work. For me, it's overcoming a lot of my own beliefs. You know, I heard, oh, well, the nine goes to a three in a health. I read the three description. I was like, that's a good thing? Like, I was taught, like wanting to be, like, seen. Well, that's not very spiritual. Or wanting to be, like, out front. Well, that's not what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, that's, yeah. like, drawing yeah. attention to myself, you know? Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. so even my thinking about going to a three and, like, viewing that as unhealthy, like, I'm like, holy crap. Like, I have a lot of work to do, you know? So it's just that time and that space. To really process and, you know, maybe doing the transformation things, like believing, like, what are the lies? What is actually unhealthy? It is a lot of self stuff. And then just having a lot of grace and space and time. Like when my husband was like, he's like, yeah, go and take some time for yourself. Like, that's the best thing he can do for me. You know, just, I don't even know how I feel about things. I need time and space. And, you know, I've been really unhealthy these past 5 years, having almost a 5-year-old who knows what she wants at any given moment. So I'm constantly having to pull myself away. Like, yeah, I'm the adult here. What are we doing here? You know, because she knows what she wants to do at every given second, you know? So just having space wow. to even know what the heck I'm thinking, want to do with my life, you know, any of that. It requires space.
We're good. Whatever you guys want. No, yeah, I would agree because we don't process as quickly as you guys. There's many times I really don't I really don't have a preference if there's a smaller decision, like where do you want to go to dinner? And there's other times when I do, and I'm you know, in terms of growing, I've been able to voice that, you know. If it's something I really don't want to do, I've actually been able to voice that now. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's a good thing. But yeah, in terms of like fruit of the spirit, it would be patience with us that we're slower processors.
Mm.
You know?
Mm. Thank you. Really good.
There is the people pleasing element for sure. But I think like I'm a very like simple, holistic person. Like war, hate war. Why can't everybody just get along? Like, seriously, like, why is it so hard? You know, like it could be like an uncomfortable situation I witness even on television. Like, you know, like I'm not even a part of it. I'm watching it and I'm uncomfortable. It's like a gut thing, you know, like I could be at a conference and somebody just keeps talking too long, like past the thing. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so uncomfortable for you.
Yeah.
Like it's just there. It will never go away. We're uncomfortable with any kind of, we just want everybody to get along and be happy. Like kumbaya would be awesome. Mm. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the same here. Like I do not like dealing with disagreements, I guess, or especially like at work, if I have to have what they call like a straight talk with somebody, I struggle with that. Like I've had to lay off people at work. That kills me. But like, you know, it's trying to find the courage to do that. The easy route is just to be complacent and be like, oh, I'm not going to handle that. Or I'm just going to agree with whatever they say. But where your courage comes in is when you're like, no, I am going to step out of my nine box and deal with this. Mm-hmm. Or even like in personal relationships, friendships, marriages, whatever, you say, hey, I think we need to talk about this rather than just being like, well, it's just going to get resolved eventually or it will just go away. I have always had a hard time bringing up an awkward conversation because of the fear of what the result is. Either you lose that relationship or then things become awkward or, you know, what happens next? It's the fear of the unknown of, because when you know when everyone's at peace with each other, you know what that means. Everyone's happy, right? Like everyone's, it's like this. But you don't, at least for me, I don't like the spike in the, you know, the conflict or the uncomfortableness of someone's response. And I get the same thing too, where like I'll be watching something happen, like an argument happen at work. And I'm just like, I need to go hide right now because, you know, it's just even like being witness to it is awkward. Never mind being a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of that stuff. and also I think we're naturally agreeable and the way we see the world is kind of open to, yeah, I see your point. We're curious that way. We, you know, I look at the three of you and you're all that way, you know, like, and so it's very easy for us to, you know, agree to get along.
There's like a lower threshold, it sounds like what you're saying, and like all four of you saying, you have very low threshold for discomfort and internal or external.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas others would have more of like, oh, whatever, you know, like that was uncomfortable, or all the way to the degree of like, ooh, yeah, you want to go at it, let's go at it. Whereas, so you guys are definitely like the nine is the one that has the lowest amount. So you're always working at keeping the waters of your life very still.
Right.
Okay.
And if we disagree, then we might, the reaction from that disagreement might say we don't matter. And that's a big thing for us.
You know, that's an excellent insight because I think one of the conversations I've had with the nine has been about the emotions you are denying are probably confirming to you the greatest, the deepest fear you have, which is that you actually don't matter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I think for all types, the emotions that we're avoiding are the things that confirm to us the very fear that our type has.
Mm. That's fair.
Yeah. So it was kind of like a ding when I saw that. I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense as to why we're all of us, all patterns, all types, have an avoidance that we're dealing with. Even the most confrontational eight has an avoidance thing. It's avoidance of vulnerability, avoidance of anything that makes you feel weak. All the emotions that we avoid them because they confirm to us our greatest fears. Thank you, panel of nines. Really, thank you, thank you. It's wonderful.
Thank you all for listening to the Enneagram Panels podcast, and to all you nines out there, we are so grateful for you. Thank you so much for being you. We love you, and just keep taking time to listen to your own heart and your own voice so you can bring your best to us. To find out more about Enneagram coaching from Joel Hubbard, you can go to www.joelhubbard.com. The Enneagram Panels podcast is brought to you by Talkie Records Studio in Lynn, Massachusetts, and Vine 39 Church in Stoneham, Massachusetts. Have a good one. Next time, the Enneagram Panel of Ones.